And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Peter Muse, our special guest, as we talk about witches and warlocks of Massachusetts. And we'll get into some other incredible things happening in New England. And, of course, take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Peter Muse, as we talk about his incredible work. And what's next on your plate, Peter? What do you do next?
You know, I'm thinking maybe I will write a book about monsters. I've done a witch book. Maybe I'll move on to a monster book. I always like a good monster story.
Monsters of New England?
Yeah, Monsters of New England, maybe Monsters of Massachusetts. I'll see which one feels like the better, more fertile ground for a book, I guess. There are some great monster stories from this area. I really like a goat man story. I don't know if you know much about goat men.
Yeah, that's weird. They are weird.
Yeah, there are a few of them from this area. There's a great one from a town in Maine, a place called Cherryfield, Maine, which is a small town up there in Maine. And from the 1950s, basically there's a guy in Cherryfield driving his pickup truck down a road through the woods. It's very woodsy up there. It's a big forest. He's driving his pickup truck down the road through the woods, listening to the radio. And suddenly the engine stops and the radio shuts off. And you're like, oh, crap, like what's happened? Gets out of his truck, he opens up the hood, he's looking at the engine to try to see why everything is shut off. And as he's looking at the engine, he notices suddenly this man emerges from the trees by the side of the road. And, you know, the man is wearing like a red flannel shirt, because it's Maine, it's cold, so he's wearing a red flannel shirt. And he has a beard. Then he notices the man who stepped out of the woods has these small pointed horns. And also from the waist down, he has the legs of a goat and goat hooves. And so this goat man wearing a red flannel shirt steps out to the road and just kind of smiles at the man whose truck has broken down, just gives him this smile, a creepy smile. And then he walks across the road and into the forest on the other side and disappears. The guy, of course, who's repairing his truck is like, what the heck just happened? But as soon as the goat man disappears into the woods, the engine turns back on and the radio turns back on, and everything's back to normal, and the guy jumps in the truck and just speeds off down the road. I kind of like that story because that shutting down of electrical systems is something you often see in, like, UFO stories, right, where, you know, cars shut down, things like that. It's interesting it's attached to this story as well.
You wrote a book about British and Irish fairies. Tell me about that.
Sure. Well, I contributed a chapter to that book. Lots of people contributed chapters to that book. And I focused on New England, where there is a lot of fairy folklore in New England. It's not as prevalent as witch folklore, but there is a lot of fairy folklore. And often people in this area will talk about puckwudgies. I don't know if you've heard that term, puckwudgie.
I have not.
You have not? Okay. Well, there's sort of these small little humanoids who live in the woods, often covered with long hair. And
small being what kind of size, Peter?
Like, let's say 3 feet.
Okay.
Like 3 feet high, covered in long hair. And they're kind of, some people say they're malevolent. Some people say they're just tricksters and you should leave them alone. But it's an interesting cryptid, if you want to call it a cryptid, or interesting folklore character, if you want to call it a folklore character. It's because the name is drawn from the Ojibwe people who actually live way out in the upper Midwest. They don't live in New England, but it kind of became attached to folklore in this area through the writings of the poet Longfellow, who was really popular in the 19th century. He wrote a song called Song of Hiawatha. That was a poem he wrote, very popular. And in that poem, he talks about puckwudgies. Longfellow lived here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and so people in this area started to use that term puckwudgie, which is from the Ojibwe folks out in the upper Midwest. They started to use the term puckwudgie for fairies and small folks that they would see here in New England. So that's kind of the term people often use now to talk about the kind of magical, fairy-like beings who live in the woods or puckwudgies. And they're kind of, I don't know, I guess you probably wouldn't necessarily want to meet one. There's a ledge, for example, down in the Freetown State Forest, which is a big park in the southeastern part of the state. And there's a ledge there called the Assonet Ledge. And supposedly, if you are standing on the top of that ledge looking out over the lake at the bottom of it, you run the risk of having a puck wedge. You come up behind you and push you off the ledge.
Jeez.
It might just be folklore, but, you know, I'm not going to risk it myself, I guess. So.
Well, and these people must be seeing something, some kind of creature.
That's the question. Like, what do they see or what are they experiencing that leads them to think it's a puck wedge? There's a great book by a guy named Christopher Balzano, who's a paranormal investigator. He wrote a book called Dark Woods, which is just stories from the Freetown State Forest in Massachusetts. She has a couple puckwudgie stories in that book. You know, and one of them, a woman named Joan is walking her dog in the Freetown State Forest, and just, you know, doing the dog walking thing. It's like a Sunday morning or whatever. And as they're walking, she and her dog suddenly see this small, gray, hairy humanoid sitting on a log. And they're naturally freaked out, as you would be if you saw something like that.
Absolutely.
And they kind of look at the puckwudgie. And the puckwudgie kind of looks at them, and then Joan and her dog just get the hell out of there. Like, we're getting out of here. We don't want to see this. We're done. So they go out of the forest. But interestingly, like, Joan said she would see the puckwudgie outside of her house after that. Like, it would kind of be peeping in the windows or hanging around in the front yard or things like that. So it kind of followed her home almost. And so that only ended when she left the area, when she moved away from the Freetown State Forest. And another person told a similar story about seeing a puckwudgie in the forest, and then it would show up in his driveway. Like, he goes out at night to turn on his car to go someplace and turns on the headlights, and oops, there's a puckwudgie, you know, standing right in your headlights. And again, so that only stopped when he left that area also. So they kind of are attached to the area, but they can also take interest, apparently, in people who take interest in them, you know, if you believe the stories.
Are they like leprechauns?
I think they're maybe a little wilder, right?
Okay,
maybe a little more feral seeming than a leprechaun. They don't interact with people quite in the same way. Although someone did write to me, and she was of Native American descent. And she told me that her grandparents may have had some puckwudgies living in their house with them. And they were totally pleasant. And they were just there, right? They're almost like having a guest in the house or something like that. So part of it, I think, may even depend on your attitude towards them or maybe even your ethnic background.
Are you still getting reports of these creatures or has it stopped?
People still see them. People still talk about them.
So they're out there.
I mean, they were the last one, the person who wrote to me, that was maybe 3 years ago, the person who wrote to me about her grandparents. And that was actually, she saw them in Lawrence, Massachusetts, which is a really dense urban city here, but she had seen puckwudgies in Lawrence, Massachusetts. So people still report seeing them. And they're just kind of one of the local phenomena, I guess, whatever they are, whether they are real or just, you know, people are just seeing something else, I'm not really sure.
You've been to several haunted sites out in New England. Let's go through them. Ramtail Mill Complex, what is that?
Oh, that's a spooky one. That's down in Foster, Rhode Island. And that's an old mill complex that was built in the 1700s by the banks of a river. So the river would power the mill. And I think it was made cloth and things like that. And the supervisor of the mill, it was a man named Peleg, P-E-L-E-G, Peleg Walker. He wanted to marry the mill owner's daughter. At least that's the legend, right? He wanted to marry the mill owner's daughter. The mill owner said, no, my daughter's not going to marry one of my employees. And so Peleg Walker was very distraught, and he killed himself. And he hanged himself using the rope that was attached to the bell that they would use to summon the workers to the mill every morning.
Oh, jeez. So he's hanging from the bell, basically.
He hangs from the bell, and that the morning after he's dead, people wake up and they hear the bell ringing. They go into the mill. They see Peleg Walker hanging by this rope.
Oh.
The bell is ringing like, oh, boy, this is terrible.
He's notifying the whole community that he's dead.
Right, right. It's a dramatic way to kill yourself. So the owner of the mill cuts him down, cuts his body down, says, you know, Peleg Walker was crazy, whatever, everybody go back to work. Everybody goes back to work. The next morning, they hear the bell ringing again. They go to work. They see the rope is swaying all by itself. Ring the bell, but there's nobody
attached to it.
People think, okay, this is a little spooky. the mill owner, like, just takes down the rope. He's like, folks, just ignore the bell. Just come to work when the sun comes up, right? That's how we'll do it from now on. Then the next morning, they hear the bell ringing again. They go, and just the bell is ringing on its own. There's no rope attached to the bell at all. It's just, like, swinging, ringing all by itself. And at this point, everyone has realized the obvious, which is that this place is haunted by the ghost of Peleg Walker. And so people start to see him at night patrolling the mill building with a lantern like he used to do when he was alive, although he's, you know, dead and buried. And so people get spooked, and they stop working there, and they move away. And gradually, the village that built up around the mill becomes abandoned. The mill shuts down. So if you go to Foster, Rhode Island today, you can actually go to see the mill and see the village, which used to be there. And it's mostly just stone walls and big foundations and cellar holes. It's kind of a creepy place to be.
I bet, yeah.
And the one time I went there, that I don't usually have strange phenomena happen to me. I'm not, maybe just because I'm too cautious or something. But we went, and I was taking pictures with my iPhone of, you know, just stone walls and old buildings and whatever.
Sure.
And interestingly, a lot of those pictures did not come out. They just came out pure white. Like, I would take a picture with my iPhone, and then it would just show up pure white on the phone like that.
Something didn't want those pictures shown, huh?
Yeah, it was a weird, it was a creepy place. I'll say it was one of the creepier places I've been, I think.
What about Freetown State Forest?
Well, I mentioned the Freetown State Forest with the Pukwudgies. And we went there just to explore and see, you know, the Assonet Ledge. We wanted to go see this place where, you know, the Pukwudgies push people off, which is probably a bad idea to go investigate someplace like that. But we're like, oh, ledge. And, you know, so we parked our car, and the parking lot was surrounded by all these dead trees, like, I don't know, pine borer beetles or something had killed all the trees. And then, so walking down the path into the woods, we hear a lot of gunfire. Apparently the shooting range nearby. So already, like, my temperament, right? My mood is not in a good place to hear gunfire as I'm walking in the woods.
You're uptight as it is,
I'm
right?
Uptight, yes, exactly. And then, like, it's early March, the trees are still bare, the wind is blowing, all the trees are squeaking as they blow against each other to make a squeak, 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 squeak sound. I'm like, ugh, this is just not calming me down. I'm not a calm person at this moment. We don't see anybody for like 45 minutes walking through this forest. And then finally we come across this group of teenagers who are all incredibly high out of their minds. And not like happy, loving high, but like weird, sketchy high. And I'm like, oh, like this forest is just like giving me bad vibes. And we finally reach the Assonet Ledge, and I'm ready to like have the maximum like creepy paranormal experience given everything that's led up to it. But then we go up to the top of the ledge where the Pukwudgies supposedly push people off to die, and we see like a group of school children having a picnic with their teachers, and all the like spooky atmosphere just like dissipates all of a sudden because there are all these kids up there laughing and having fun. So it started out spooky, but then became less spooky, I guess. You know what I mean? Although there are plenty of other creepy stories about that forest. Supposedly, there's also the ghost of a witch who haunts that forest, who appears in people's bedrooms at night who live next to the forest.
A real witch?
They don't know. Like, again, this is from Christopher Bolzano's book, Dark Woods, but he talks about this group of boys who are playing in the woods and had heard this woman laughing at them. They hear a woman laughing, and they don't see anybody. Like, an invisible woman is laughing at them, which is a little weird. And so they're kind of freaked out and go home. And after that, they all have dreams about a woman with long gray hair trying to come in their window at night, like she's tapping on the window.
Ooh, like the old hag syndrome.
Yes, exactly. And they don't do it, but one boy does, in his dream, open the window and let her in. And his parents are just in the living room when this happens, and they hear his screams of terror. And they run down to his bedroom, and they find him, like, thrashing around as he was wrestling with this invisible entity. And he said, you know, I let the witch in. I let the witch into my house. And so that group of boys said they saw the witch for years. Like, she would come up often in the fall and sort of try to come into their bedrooms at night. And often they said they also saw a black cat that would walk on two legs that would appear in the forest as well. It's interesting because there's no record historically of anybody being executed for witchcraft in the Freetown area. I don't even think there's a record of any witchcraft trials.
Who would come back and haunt the place or something like that? What about the Gilson Road Cemetery story?
Sure. That's up in New Hampshire. It's just a little cemetery on Gilson Road, which is in Nashua. There's a story there that the road is haunted by a woman named Betty Gilson. And you're supposed to stand outside the cemetery and say, "Betty Gilson, I have your baby." If you say those words, "Betty Gilson, I have your baby,"
oh my God,
the ghost of Betty Gilson is supposed to appear, and you'll see her standing on the side of the road. When we went to the Gilson Cemetery, I did not say, "Betty Gilson, I have your baby," because I didn't want to see a ghost.
That was pretty smart, Peter, on your part.
Right, I'm not going to summon any ghosts in the cemetery. It's not my thing. But the cemetery is a really interesting cemetery. It's, you know, from the 1700s, early 1800s, a lot of babies are buried there. So just a lot of tiny stones that say Baby Gilson, Baby Gilson, Baby Gilson, Baby Gilson. It's like the Gilson family cemetery. So you can tell, like, where that legend comes from, because there are all these markers that say Baby Gilson on them. And people have left all sorts of things there. Like, a lot of, like, sometimes people leave coins on graves, or you've probably seen that when you go to a cemetery, people leave a coin on a grave. So many coins are left there. People left stuffed animals at the graves. And these are children who have been dead for, you know, 150, 200 years. And so people leaving stuffed animals there. Also, there's a lot of, we found some, like, have you seen the Blair Witch Project?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, sure.
All those weird little twig sculptures in that movie. We found a lot of weird little twig sculptures in the Gilson Street Cemetery, too. So there's a lot of human activity there. Like, people must go there and try to summon the ghosts, I guess. Like, not something I would do myself, just because I'm more of a cautious person, let's say.
Peter, we're going to come back and chat a little bit more about some of the strange things happening in New England, and we'll also take some phone calls as well. And where do people get your books?
You can get my books anywhere you buy books online. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Bookshop.com, all those places will carry my books.
And give out your website, if you would. Spell it for folks.
Sure. My website is the New England Folklore Blog. So it's New England Folklore, one word, newenglandfolklore.blogspot.com.
And can you take emails through that website?
Yes, my email address is on there.
Great. Because
I'm happy to hear from people.
A lot of people would probably love to get a hold of you if they're ever in the New England area. You don't give tours, though, do you?
I don't. I've given a few private tours, but I don't usually give tours, no.
All right. Well, stay with us, Peter. We're going to come back and take phone calls as they line up to chat with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. So, folks, get ready to make the call. Peter Muse with us, noted author and anthropologist. After you're done doing your Thanksgiving festivities, please join us. We'll be live tomorrow night on Thanksgiving night. Joseph Gallenberger joins us for the first couple hours to talk about changing your luck. Looking forward to that. And then later on, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us to talk about where are the missing honeybees? What has happened to them? And then in our last hour of the program, we'll have open lines with Cheryl and myself and you on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment with Peter Muse and take final calls with him as we talk about haunted things going on in New England. George Norrie back with Peter Muse. We'll get to your calls in just a second here. Peter, modern paranormal phenomena compared to older legends, is there much of a change?
Yeah, I would say there is a change. I guess when I look at, like, 400 years of weird stories from New England, what I take away is that people always experience strange things. It's just how we explain it sort of is what changes over time. And there is some continuity. Like, I was telling earlier that story about the haunted house from 1734.
Yeah.
And some of those phenomena are still things people would associate with a haunted house, right? Noises, doors opening and closing, the weird lights, like almost like orbs, right? So some of that is the same. People are less likely now to report seeing witches, right? You mentioned, like, the old hag syndrome, which is where you're asleep at night and you think that an entity is in your room, often a witch. And that shows up in a lot of Salem witch trial accounts. Even people said, you know, Susanna Bishop came into my bedroom at night and tried to smother me while I slept. And you hear those stories about, you know, witches coming into people's bedrooms and trying to hurt them. People don't have those sorts of reports now, but people might talk about extraterrestrials appearing in their bedroom at night instead and doing things to them. Or maybe people might talk about a demon or a shadow entity appearing in their bedroom at night, trying to do something to them. So it's like people are still experiencing a very similar phenomenon, but they're giving it a slightly different explanation, if that makes sense.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Bill in Los Angeles to get us started. Hey, Bill, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too, George and Peter.
Thank you.
Coming from a journalism and history background myself, I want Peter to help solve an empirical modern witch mystery. There's a 2005 History Channel video that with what looks like a witch on a broomstick somewhere in Mexico, and it's not a computer-generated image because it was taken on videotape. And I was asking your colleague George Knapp about this about 6 weeks ago, and he said that thing blew his mind too. And we were trying to figure out, is this a drone? Probably not, because they didn't have drones back in 2005 that could do that. And even if they did, you can't stick something on a drone and expect it to fly because it blocks the airflow. And I'm wondering if Peter is familiar with this. It looks like the old hag type witch.
Yeah, on, you're right.
You know, flying. And it's the most bizarre thing that I've ever seen. And I'm not one prone to believe, you know, in things without explanations, but that one's got me.
Could it have been a kite, Bill?
You know, that is a possibility, but if it is, they did a real bang up job in disguising it. And again, I think even with a kite, it might be difficult to make it stay airborne. And there was no evidence of that, but that is a possibility.
Have you seen anything about this, Peter?
I think I have seen this on the internet. I do like a good strange video. I guess what I would say is, you know, my gut is it's probably a hoax of some kind, right?
It kind of looked like the Wizard of Oz witch.
Right, like the classic kind of Halloween witch. You know, the Puritans would have said that witches flew, right, on broomsticks or on riding animals or things like that. But they did it by sending out their soul came out of their body. So it wasn't a physical body that was flying around. It was just like a spectral body that was flying around. So maybe the photographer or the videographer captured somebody's spectral body somehow. But I would guess it's probably a hoax. We just don't know what type of hoax it is.
First time caller Jamie with us in Odessa, Texas. Hey, Jamie, go ahead.
Yes, hi, and happy Thanksgiving tomorrow.
No, thank you. You
America.
Too. You too.
Thank you, George, for taking the call. I have always been interested in Merlin, and I'm not going to say how old I am, but when I was growing up, we only had like one or two channels on the TV and didn't get cable till almost 1990, so I did read a lot. And as I was reading about Merlin, I found out later, I'm like, oh, wow, King Uther really lived, and Arthur was a real person. Well, what about Merlin? And I was wondering if he had any ideas on what was going on during that era with the witchcraft and all that, because while I was reading it, I had a feeling that there was something coming to human beings to open up, kind of like what's happening up to us now and opening our inner awarings. And I always felt like that man at that point in time couldn't handle it. And maybe I don't necessarily believe in aliens. I think everything's the government right now anyway. But I was thinking, well, maybe the aliens erased our minds until we could handle whatever that power is. And I was wondering if he ever studied the witchcraft and the warlocks of King Uther and all them ages, and if he really thinks Merlin existed.
What do you think, Peter? There's some people believe Merlin was the real deal.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think King Arthur, as we understand him now, and Uther Pendragon and Merlin and all those folks, we tend to see them as like legendary or, you know, literary figures or figures in movies, right? Some people think there is perhaps some basis in historical fact, right? This, that perhaps Arthur and the other people associated with him were like chieftains at the time when, you know, the Romans were leaving England because the Romans had colonized England. The Romans were leaving England, and then, you know, it was time for a different political structure to take place. I've also heard people say that perhaps Merlin was actually a druid, right? So one of these sort of ancient Celtic priests/magicians who were sort of the guardians of Celtic lore. So I've heard that Merlin may have been a druid of some kind also. It's hard to say, like, it was so long ago, and so many legends get added on to whatever may have really happened in the past, right? And on top of legends, we have books, and then you have movies and TV shows. So often it's hard to discern, I think, really what happened, you know, whatever was probably like 1,500 years ago.
West of the Rockies, KJ's with us in Mayer, Arizona. Welcome to the show. Hi, KJ.
Hey, how you doing there? You're hanging in tight. You guys, you do the best show.
Thank you,
anyway,
sir.
I did cadaver human remains work for years, and I have a good friend who worked on a case, and it was a serial killer, and they had no body, no crime. So they had him in custody, and they took the dogs out, and they ran this area where they believed he had buried one of his victims. And they had him, the dog alerted, they went over and broke into the ground, found one of his victims. The serial killer was in custody. He started to choke. And then they said there was an entity, a cold entity that came into the area, and he died of a heart attack right there.
The serial killer did?
Yes.
Wow.
And he had killed over 100 people, women mostly. And this is truth. And so there is spirits that come up. This poor soul was buried there for a long time. As soon as they opened the grave, he began to choke.
KJ, is his name public?
I can't say that.
Okay.
But I will say this, that I've done human remains work for years, and I've seen a lot of very interesting things. There's so many people missing out there right now. And the only thing is you can fool a machine, but you can't fool a dog.
That's a good point. Do you think, Peter, it's possible for the dead to come back and take vengeance?
That's a tough question. I mean, certainly people talk about it, you know, when you look back, and speaking from what I study, like New England stories, you know, there are ghost stories from late 1600s where a man is asleep here in Boston, and he's asleep in his bed, and he sees his brother appear in his bedroom. And his brother lives in London, and his brother has, I think the account says, a grievous wound on his head. So he has a big wound on his head. And his brother basically says, I'm here to tell you that I was murdered by a drunkard in London. And you have to, you know, try to get vengeance on me, for me. So then the ghost disappears, and the man in Boston is like, wow, this is surprising. Last I heard, my brother was fine, but later he learned that his brother was indeed beaten to death by a drunk man in the street. So I mean, these ghost stories go way, way, way back, so there may be something to them, right?
Absolutely. Next up, let's go to Gretchen in Martin, Texas. Texas. Hey, Gretchen, go ahead.
Hi there. I have laryngitis, so I hope you can understand me. Peter, have you ever studied anything in Barry, Massachusetts?
Barry, Massachusetts? Anything out that way, Peter?
I haven't been out to Barry. It's way out in the western part, but do you know something interesting out there?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a really old farmhouse, and I think I was about in second grade. And I could hear someone walking up my staircase and just standing in the doorway. And he was tall. He had one of those really tall stovepipe hats on. Mm. And each night, he would come closer and closer. And I begged my little sister to come sleep with me. And I guess after about a week or so, I got her to do it. And right when he got up to my bed, I guess maybe because he saw her, he never came back again. And it was like an all dark figure.
Hmm.
And then in New Hampshire, I went to a college, Franklin Pierce College, and I was walking down Maple Syrup Road, and it was sort of like a marshy lake, and I saw like a furry thing, like human, but small, and furry, just sitting on a rock in the middle of the marsh.
Sounds what you just described, Peter, earlier.
Right, the Pukwudgie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there have been some other accounts of people seeing them in New Hampshire, like in the Portsmouth area. There's a big reservation by the water there. People have seen them in the woods. So people have seen them in some cemeteries in New Hampshire. So people do tell Pukwudgie legends from New Hampshire. So that's interesting. And I'm glad that the guy in the stovepipe hat disappeared, because that's kind of a creepy
encounter
to have when you're a kid.
Did you have a lot of ghost stories in New England as well, as opposed to the witch stories?
But there are a lot of ghost stories. There are. And I tend to leave the ghost stories to the braver people who like to go to do the paranormal investigations
at
night.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I have a lot of friends who are like, we're going to the Haunted Mansion. Do you want to come? And I'm like, no, I think I'll pass. You know.
Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Joseph, squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. And by the way, George, the dead always wait for you to come back.
Yes, they do.
Peter, have you ever been to some of the vortexes that are in like positive and negative ley lines? They create vortexes. Native Americans, they call this sacred grounds, and you shouldn't be going in there. There's some very dangerous things that can happen in there. The shamans also practice, some of them can practice the dark arts. And they've known to do all kinds of things, like shapeshift. Are you familiar with the Native American witchcraft, or shall I say, natural medicine?
I will say two things. One, in terms of like vortexes and places. I mean, the most famous one in New England is the Bridgewater Triangle, which is kind of in the southeastern part of the state, and it's a triangular area which is centered on a large swamp called the Hockomock Swamp. And, I mean, people have been seeing strange things in the Hockomock Swamp for a long time. And it's like UFOs, Bigfoots, you know, giant black panthers, giant winged flying things that may be humanoids, maybe giant birds, ghosts, Pukwudgies, you name it. Like, if you want to see something strange, the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts and the Hockomock Swamp, it's kind of the place to go. In the Hockomock Swamp, I would, you know, if you go to places like that, just be cautious, because it is a swamp. There are bears there. There are deer ticks. It'll give you Lyme disease. So it's a sort of a place to be cautious. So, like, that's a vortex-type area that's well-known. I have been through there and been to places in it.
Got to be careful there. Peter, we're out of time. Have a great Thanksgiving. And thank you. First-time guest. Let's get you back again, okay?
Yeah, this was great. Thank you, George. Happy Thanksgiving.
Peter Mews for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.